This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, May 25th, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. And Taylor, it's semi-official, but Jacob DeGrom, Sunday Night Baseball this coming weekend. I'm pretty fired up about that.
That is awesome. We've been on DeGrom watch now. I really liked when he just torched all those minor leaguers last week. So I hope he does it again on Sunday Night Baseball. And listen up, Mets fans. We are excited to have the Mets on Sunday Night Baseball. All right? Don't let the haters get you down, Buster. Someone tweeted at you yesterday, like, oh, how'd you trash the Mets this time? I cannot believe it. All we do is talk about the Nets. We want them to be good. I don't understand.
I don't understand either, but you know what? As I told you yesterday, it absolutely goes in cycles. We got to hope that DeGrom gets through tonight's start. So yes, I'll be the one applying ice packs when he comes off the mound after every half inning, saying, you feeling okay? You feeling good for tonight? Look, it's right now a challenging time for the Mets because of all these injuries. Yesterday, Zach Scott, their general manager, told reporters that Michael Conforto, Jeff McNeil are likely out until late June because of the severity of their hamstring pulls. Yesterday, when the Mets were facing the Rockies, they played James McCann at first base for the first time for McCann professionally. They're just trying to put as many major leaguers in the lineup as they possibly can. And in the top of the second inning, they fell behind.
Pitch is hit pretty well to right field. Going back, Maben to watch it go. Into the bullpen. Touch them all time for Ryan McMahon.
850 KOA, and the Rockies took an early lead. Bottom of the fourth inning, Francisco Lindor came to the plate.
VR leads from first pitch. Ground ball up the middle to his left. Story has it. Flipped to second, one over to first, two. Double play off the bat of Lindor. And now those scattered boos from earlier start to smear a little bit around the ballpark.
That from WCBS, the Rockies would win this game 3-2. Just the third win in 20 road games for Colorado this season because the Mets are so banged up. Austin Gomber throwing eight innings, allowing just two hits. In Chicago, Tony La Russa managed against the Cardinals for the first time since taking over this year. And in the bottom of the sixth inning, St. Louis is leading 1-0 until this happened.
Average lead at first by Mercedes. Vaughn hits one deep. Left field. It is gone! Two-run homer, Andrew Vaughn. White Sox lead.
The great Len Casper, ESPN 1000. Somebody finally slowed down the San Diego Padres. How about the Milwaukee Brewers?
And the pitch. Manny sends one in the left center and deep. Get up! Get up! Get out of here! Gone for Manny Pena. He just hit one out of here in deepest left center and way out of here. That is number four for Manny Pena. And the Brewers have a 2-0 lead as Pena goes yard.
The Brewers win 5-3. The Indians clung to a late inning lead. They needed just one more out. The Tigers threatening, and this happened.
The 2-1.
Right side. That's falling, and it's caught. What a grab by Jordan Luplo to steal it away from Eric Haas.
Ad from the Tigers Television Network. Making Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to LinkedIn.com/sports. And the Rays are making a move in the American League East standings. Although yesterday, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. almost single-handedly beat them.
It's a high fly ball deep to left field. The Rosarito is back. It's out of here. Vladdy Guerrero, his second home run of the ball game, has tied it up.
Buck Martinez, Sportsnet 590. Yeah, the Blue Jays were down 5-0 in this game. They came back. They went into extra innings. And in the top of the 11th, the Rays absolutely exploded.
There's Brasso chopping one over the head of Espinal. He lost the chopper in the sun. And it rolls down the left field line. Brasso around first, limps his way into second. And he's there with a Baltimore chop double. And scoring on the play is Margot. The touchdown and extra point is good. It's 14-7, Tampa Bay.
Dave Will, 620 WDAE. The final score there was 14-8. The Rays move into first place in the American League East. But Vladimir Guerrero Jr., oh my God. He now has 15 homers and a Major League Baseball best 1104 OPS this season. The only other Blue Jays player with 15 homers and 1100 OPS in his first 46 games of a season was Jose Bautista in 2011. And today is a big day for umpire Joe West in Chicago today. In the game between the White Sox and Cardinals, he will be behind the plate for career game number 5,376. And he will pass the record set by Hall of Famer Bill Clem that has stood for 80 years. I'm going to be talking with Jessica Mendoza about that in a second. But before we get to Jess and Doug Glanville and Sarah Langs, now streaming on ESPN Plus, The Ultimate Fighter, the reality show that brings top MMA prospects together under one roof to compete for a UFC contract, is back. Watch the season premiere on Tuesday, June 1st, only on ESPN Plus. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com. Also, keep up with all the NBA postseason action by listening to The Hoop Collective, The Woj Pod, The Low Post, and Jalen and Jacoby wherever you get your podcasts. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, a Foxaloner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus Chews provides one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews.
Jessica Mendoza, game analyst for ESPN, on a wide range of sports, it seems like. Jess, what have you been up to lately?
We got college softball playoffs. We just had regionals this last weekend. I was in Bristol. In fact, I jumped on a headset when you were on Sunday Night Baseball. I took over our producer, Jeff Define's headset for like a minute. And I think scared you all that I was going to run the show for Sunday Night Baseball for a minute. But no, I was there in Bristol covering. We had over 160 games. And unfortunately, Buster, for the next few weeks, every time you talk to me, all I'm going to want to talk to you about. But as we headed into the Women's College World Series, but we had some emotional moments. Literally, we were there until I was there from 11 a.m. till 2 a.m. covering all the games. It went late in Austin, Oregon, losing to Texas, which was huge. And then Washington, UW getting the upset too. They'd win twice over Michigan. And I will actually have that super regional. And for the first time, sorry, I'll be done after this. For the first time, softball will be on ABC. I'll have a super regional this Saturday. It starts on Friday at 3 o'clock on ESPN, but Saturday we'll have it on ABC at 3 o'clock Eastern. Oklahoma, the number one team in the country, they put a 24th spot over Wichita State, and they will be playing University of Washington.
So who should I bet the family farm on? Which team? And it should be an SEC team. I'm just going to tell you that right now, because you know that's where my loyalties really lie.
Yeah, well, then you'll be wrong. So if I want you to bet the family farm and lose it, go ahead with your SEC team all day long. But Oklahoma is number one, and there's no better offense. The Bruins out west, I think, are going to give them the biggest competition. Of course, they won't meet up until the Women's College World Series. But if you want the best SEC team, it would be Alabama. They have Montana Fouts. I'm going to go out on a limb and say she's the best pitcher in the country. She is stupid good. And why don't you just tune in and watch some games? And then after this weekend, I'm going to get your bet on who's the best team.
Okay.
Put you on the spot.
We'll definitely have to do that. The biggest name in baseball today might actually be that of an umpire. Joe West today will set the record for most games umpired in history. He moves back an incredible record that was set by Bill Clem 80 years ago. Bill Clem, who's a member of baseball's Hall of Fame. And this record, Jess, kind of reminds me of when I covered the Orioles and Cal Ripken broke Lou Gehrig's record. You knew that when Cal did that and he finished his streak with 2,632 straight games, no one will ever come close to that record again, in part because no team will ever let it happen. That means the way that it evolved. I mean, there were people in the Orioles organization who were kind of grumbling, wondering if it was the right thing to have that record going, but they weren't going to touch it as long as Cal was close and he was on that trajectory. I feel like the same thing with Joe West, where you hear from folks in baseball, you know what, terrific ball strike umpire. You know, there's some ways in which he bothered some players, some managers, that sort of thing. But there's a mad respect for him for putting in all those years of work, and Major League Baseball will never let an umpire come close to breaking this record. So a hats off today to Joe West.
Yeah, and there'll never be another like him. I mean, just the way you watch him just walk around the field. I mean, he debuted in 1976 at 23 years old. He's now 68 years old now. And I mean, there's so many memories I think of. Remember the stare off with Mad Bum, like just the like back and forth, like where they stared each other down. And like, I don't know, there's just so many times where I feel like he has just been, and you never want the umpire to be the story, right? But there's just nobody like Joe West. And it's like, he does it with that smile, that like there's something about him that the players do respect. And yet he is such a pivotal part. Like every time he's in a game, you can't help but talk about him, notice him. And he's been around. I mean, it's crazy. 43 years.
So the moment that I'm going to remember, my favorite moment in my interactions with Joe West, we had a game in Wrigley Field one night. You're going to remember it well. And before the game, I went in the umpire's room because it was my job during that year to cue first pitch. So Joe was in there, and you know, we were talking generally about the teams, and I mentioned to him, I said, well, the good thing tonight is we got a couple fast working pitchers, Kyle Hendricks being one of them. And the look that Joe shot me, like, are you kidding? You just broke the number one rule in baseball. You never say anything like that because you're going to jinx it. Jess, that was the night where the Yankees and the Cubs played 18 innings. It started out with about 65 degrees. Okay. The game ended.
I remember that game. I didn't know this was your fault.
Oh my God. So, and the game ended with a temperature about 32. When we got into the car to go back to the hotel, I looked at you. I think you had hypothermia. I'll always be convinced of that because you were so cold at the end of that game. Well, fast forward a few weeks, I went into the umpire's room in St. Louis, and Joe was there, and he told me, he said, hold on a second. He was going to get a policeman to have me arrested. Okay. He was going to have the policeman take me away in handcuffs because I had violated the number one rule. That was, you know, that's Joe West, a personality that's a lot of fun. Again, he's had controversial moments. I haven't always agreed with how he's handled things on the field, but he's someone who makes a lasting impression.
Forever. I mean, that's definitely going to be the case. And apparently he's going to also continue forever, as he's been showing by being 68 years old and still going.
Exactly. All right. I remember doing the Home Run Derby when Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Made his first appearance in that event. It was his rookie year. And when he was picked for that event, I can tell you behind the scenes, there were some veteran hitters who were really upset. Like, they felt like, wait a second, how is this rookie in there? I think he had 8 home runs going into that event. And the feeling was he hasn't put in his time. He doesn't have enough home runs. Why is he in there? You and I were on the field, and you felt like the moment you saw that swing and you heard the sound of the ball coming off the bat, like you understood. That was the night that he arrived. And man, he is having a monster season this year. Couple of home runs in their loss yesterday.
Yeah, no. And that's what's been incredible, is watching it, you know, come off his bat, and the variety of pitches that he hits. I mean, I don't know. I always look at, it's one thing if like you get fastballs right down the middle and like you just see guys crushing. I mean, we can all watch long balls all day long. I think yesterday though, one of them, Ryan Yarbrough, threw a first pitch 78-mile-per-hour changeup, like right, like look, it was a really good pitch buster. It was fading. It was doing all of the things you want a changeup to do. And Vlad, I think it was like 110 miles an hour off the bat. So you think about a 78-mile-an-hour pitch, the turnaround of velocity. I know I'm getting nerdy with this, but it's such a testament to his raw power. Just that, like, and it's fun to watch because it's like quiet, 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 quiet. And then unleashing. And I don't know. I mean, I'm, as you know, obsessed with hitting. I love watching like so many different types of hitters, knowing how young he is, and just really seeing right now what we're seeing with him and Ronald Acuña Jr., the two tied for the major league lead. And then you think about Fernando Tatis Jr. I think he's only two behind them. And just this like race of youth and power and what we're seeing in the game of Vlad Guerrero Jr. And a lot of people don't catch a lot of Blue Jays games. You really should, because the entire team is really good, but watching him play the game, the power that he has is a ton of fun.
And the Rays are streaking right now. The Blue Jays are struggling. As Dan Shulman pointed out on the podcast last week, the Blue Jays have not played the Orioles yet. The other three teams in the division have played the Orioles a bunch. The Blue Jays don't play their first game against Baltimore until June 17th, and then they got 19 games. The way the division's playing out, you know, the Blue Jays can't afford to take, say, 11 out of 19. Like, they need to take 16 out of 19 and do real damage against them. I want to ask you, in relation to a piece that I did on Yadier Molina, about how consistent an offensive player he's been with this really simple approach that he has. He just focuses on putting the ball in play, and he focuses on game situation. And as I was writing that piece, Jess, I was thinking to myself, you know what? We've talked all year about the lack of offense. So we've talked about, you know, the composition of the baseball. We've talked about defensive shifts. We talked about foreign substances. But I kind of feel like maybe Molina is a reminder that there's more that hitters can do to help themselves. What do you think?
Exactly. Well, in a day and age when, you know, I just did it. I was talking about how hard you hit the ball, all these numbers, and I get geeked out in it too. But Yadier Molina, I mean, what I appreciate from him, and something you wrote in this piece, that it when you just spend time really understanding like his game, like being spending time around the pitchers that he understands, he knows how to get what they're working with that day. It's not just, hey, you know, Adam Wainwright throws this well today, or, you know, it's understanding his psyche, understanding all the things, the movement to get him to pitch his best. Every pitcher will tell you that it's ever thrown to Yadi, but it never like really clicked as far as, okay, but then his approach at the plate, and you wrote this in the piece, is so similar in that he's just studying the opposing pitcher. Okay, what are his tendencies? And obviously every hitter is, but on another level that only Yadi can do, that only he can understand. He's like a complete understanding of all things pitching. And to see him work a count, especially with two strikes, and I know you talked about this, but the way he'll battle, yes, with two strikes, but it's almost like he can just understand and see what's coming. He had that hit in that you talked about, the home run on Saturday against the slider. And it's like, it's one thing to predict and guess. A lot of guys do that. It's almost a feel thing for Yadi. Like, he can just literally feel what the pitcher's about to throw.
Yeah. I mean, I talked with AJ Ellis, a longtime catcher, and working on that piece. And he mentioned that, you know, a lot of times with just about every hitter comes up, if you're a veteran catcher, it's a game of chess, and you're going to work with more information that they have. But with Yadi, it's completely different. Like, you don't even bother trying to trick him, because you know he sees everything and he knows everything. And the comparison I made would be like if you were a magician and you wanted to pull off a trick in front of David Copperfield. Yeah. You know that the guy knows how to do what you're doing. And so it really just comes down to how good of a pitch it is from the pitcher in terms of pitch execution versus trying to outthink him. And I do wonder if that might be instructive for some hitters. Look, focus on the game situation and focus on putting the ball in play in an era in which velocity is such a big factor, in an era in which a lot of hitters struggle to do that, it seems like, because they try to do too much damage. What Eduardo said to me was he really feels like that what Yadi understands is he doesn't try to do too much than what he has. He's not out there trying to hit a home run every at bat.
Well, and I think having both, I mean, every hitter has the ability to be, and clearly, like, that's why you're a big league hitter, is you have the ability to lay in one and like understand counts, understand situations. And that's the difference to me, Buster, is I see the same swing regardless of the situation too much. Like, you see an 0-2 count with runners in scoring position, from too many teams, from too many hitters, where it's an all out swing. And I get it. Like in that moment, like you can hit 3-run home run with runner in first and second, but okay. When you haven't the last 12 times, 13 times, 15 times in that situation, like where is this happening? Like, and I go back to the youth level because you can't ask these guys, okay, tomorrow to be a hitter that they're really just not. And maybe they haven't been for a very long time, but even at the youth level, like I'm coaching Little League right now. Like I'm teaching kids just how to hit a ground ball to second base, like how to understand where to put the ball and not how to just crush it. We have kids with one-handed swings. They're 7 with one-handed, like big finishing, like just, you know, cause they're watching the bigs. I get it. But like, I'm also just like, okay, but now you have 2 strikes on you and you're going to cry in about 2 minutes when you have to go back to the dugout. Put the ball in play. And this is how you do that. Like, remember Pepper Buster? I know I feel like the old, like I'm seriously like a grandpa right now, like talking about Pepper, but that was like the best thing we used to do before every game was just literally contact. Like we'd all just toss the ball and it was just a matter of like placing it to the right person that you wanted to hit it to. And it was things like that, Buster, that I know I'm going on this rant, but I just wish that everyone had it in their back pocket to be able to put the ball in play situationally, the way that you see Yadier Molina do it, the way that you see a hitter like DJ LeMahieu. They're few and far between. I do feel like we're going to get back to that more because the offensive numbers are so much more down now.
All right, Jess. Well, have fun. I'll be watching you and I will come back next week with the team to bet the farm on. Thank you.
Awesome, Buster.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Doug Glanville played 9 years in the big leagues, and now he lends his voice to ESPN and other broadcast entities.
Hey, Buster. Yeah, it's always a pleasure. You know, it's been too long. We used to rap a little more on the pod, but I know everybody's busy, but no, it's great to be here. Great to talk.
Today is the anniversary of George Floyd's murder and a time for continued reflection. And you have an essay that's running on ESPN platforms today. And like last year's, it was so beautifully written. It was moving. Taylor doesn't know this, but I like turned my head because I was starting to get real emotional hearing it. It's impossible to get through without drawing those sort of emotions. What was your general thought as you sat down to write it?
Yeah, Buster. I mean, I tried to capture, you know, what it's been like the last year. You know, we've had such a reckoning, especially, you know, a year ago, just facing the challenges as a country, really, about race, policing, community, and just where we're trying to go. And this year has been sort of a search, but within that year, we have this verdict and, you know, kind of unprecedented, right? A law enforcement charged with murder, you know, decades in jail, sentencing, and what that meant to this relief. The fact that it revealed this expectation that justice will not be served because history has been, unfair in communities of color in particular on these type of moments, but many other examples. And so you could see the collective sigh and this collective sense of what's possible, what could be next, and can we make some changes now, recognizing that justice is made a different type of decision that we've seen historically. And that's something to say and something to build on. So I thought writing about what was important to me to capture is that many times when you have incidents like this, there's the sort of, okay, let's now, you know, demonize this person. Oh, they're not a good person. They did these things. And there's sort of that response almost to back into justifying what happened. And I think it's not just always an outcome that's fatal. It can be subtle things about what I, you know, what is termed more microaggressions, but these little things that happen to you in life as a man of color, right? Whether I'm trying to get a taxi or I'm trying to buy a house in a neighborhood or getting my kids in school. This is a persistent and constant anxiety of losing your dignity or having it stripped from you or stolen from you in all different types of circumstances. I think it's kind of unfair that the police get the burden of it, even though I know the outcomes can be more serious and severe. It's just that this is a larger conversation about all the elements where this happens and the second class citizenship exists. So I wrote a piece a couple of years ago called The Comma Effect. And really it's about the benefit of the doubt that you don't get in different moments. And that little subtle difference is the difference often with, in my case, in minor league baseball, where I got accused of stealing baseballs from the team my first year in the minor leagues versus someone saying, oh, he would never steal those balls. They're just in his locker for some other reason. That comma happens all the time in your life. Even the 13th Amendment, which, you know, banned slavery, has a comma in it under the case of criminal law, it's criminal justice. So that's how the prison system and all these things form. So you have these commas in your life that shape the fact that you get this, you don't get the benefit. And in the case of policing, that comma and that split second can be fatal, could be truly life or death. And just the title of this essay that I wrote was another way to capture what I call in my class the language of dismissal. It's the sort of excuse saying, well, that, you know, that really wasn't a big deal. This person deserved it. The word just is used in the sense of, well, why didn't he just comply? Why didn't he just listen? If he did, all these things would have been different. But so I wanted to unpack that word and realize that it has this double meaning. The one is this dismissal. The other is that just is a reflection of justice, that something is just, it's righteous, it's fair, it's equal. And I wanted to turn it on its head. So the essay is inspired by bringing that sense together, going from his, why did he just comply, to all the things that you do in your mundane life that you feel are put you in danger, jogging in a neighborhood, or where you get treated certain ways just because of the color of your skin. And I have too numerous to list on the show, but I think that's the spirit of it. So I kind of rattle off this, oh, you know, just waiting at Starbucks, you get the police called on you or whatever it is. And then I kind of ratchet it up to what can be, you know, life or death when cases like Breonna Taylor and so on. So that's what I was, you know, hoping to capture, that nuance really matters. And it's central to some of the issues that we have in these relationships between police and the communities.
You really are such a beautiful writer, and you have such a great sense of pacing in your writing. And it's part of the reason why we're going to play the piece after my interview with you is done. I would encourage everyone to listen to it. It's absolutely remarkable. Look, it's clear that what happened with George Floyd had a major impact across the country and across sports. I think among professional sports, and I say this as someone who, you know, spent most of my adult life covering professional baseball, it had more impact on pro baseball than any of the other sports. I'm curious about your perspective on that, because it seemed like there were a lot of conversations that happened last year that you never would have thought could have happened before that.
Yeah, it was very different in baseball. And part of it is the makeup of the game, the history of the game. This is the game of Jackie Robinson. And baseball recognized, and people have definitely called out baseball, that, you know, here you are, the game of Jackie. You integrated a major institution before the U.S. military. I mean, you were the first major institution to integrate. That is saying a lot. And sure, there was other agendas, but it was a social experiment. And, you know, to keep up that legacy, would have been a great thing for baseball to be in this like proactive, progressive stance on using sport to tie us together. And baseball kind of flatlined in that area for the most part, you know, in terms of hiring of managers and diversity at the top and all these things that just baseball fell short on living up to that, which was Jackie Robinson's literally dying wish for the game. But so I think as the last few years have come around, especially with George Ford, baseball is already trying to shift a little more to get more into that, the modernity on these issues. And I think George Ford was at that moment where they've done a lot more aggressive moves and tried to be part of the solution in a way that celebrates sport at its best. So, but yeah, the other sports are basketball and the NFL are much more, you know, large percentage of Black players. You have much more camaraderie in a certain way of shared experience, but baseball is extremely diverse. It's international. And I always felt baseball could set the tone for how we can work together as a people.
And you just hit on what I think has to happen for Major League Baseball next. And some of these conversations started, last summer after George Floyd was killed, that there needs to be more diversity in front offices. Theo Epstein, I thought, gave voice to it maybe better than anybody, because he's someone who's had a lot of influence in the game. He's going to make a speech in Cooperstown sometime in his future. And he said last year, and I'm paraphrasing here, that when he looked back at his own track record, he thinks he hired too many people who look like him and had backgrounds similar to his own. I think that's an approach that needs to happen from the top of Major League Baseball. You know, I remember last year, as we were having these conversations, there was a series of pictures of folks who were at the very top of the game. They all look like me, Doug. That's the reality. It felt like, last summer. And I think that's the next step for baseball.
Yeah, I mean, Buster, you know, part of it is, you know, and Theo was very good about expressing that, you know, it doesn't have to be couched in malicious intent. Now, sometimes it is, but there's also this blind spot of reinforcing your own experiences. And unfortunately, in our country, most people live in a very segregated world. It's a very segregated existence where you live, all these experiences. So who's around you, where you went to college, we tend to have this homogenous experience. So when it comes to hiring and you have power, power tends to reinforce that and justify its own existence. This is Eric Liu from my class I'm talking about. So, so that is a big part. And remember the Selig rule, which sort of created the opportunity to interview minority candidates or diverse candidates, came about in 1999. And there was still this long period where people with no experience were hired and there was no people of color hired at these positions. And what I do appreciate about baseball is the way they're phrasing that isn't what creates this this narrative of, oh, it's a charity and you don't really deserve it, but we're going to give you this opportunity. So that condescension is a problem. And what baseball has said now is, no, we have the blind spot. There's all this talent out there. We've overlooked it. We've ignored it. We've minimized it. We've flat out discriminated against it. And now we're just trying to make amends to have a different system, recognizing leadership comes in many forms and fashions. And I think that's something that they need to kind of stay on to continue to make these changes.
All right, Doug. Well, thanks for the essay. Thanks again for the time. It's always great to talk with you.
All right, Buster. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Here's Doug Glanville's essay that ran on OTL. Give a listen.
Just 1 year ago, on just another day, our lives were eclipsed by a singular death. The glare exposed that the eyes of justice had been peeking from beneath its blindfold, weighing down the guilty side of the scales with a color-coded use of force. Then justice flailed around desperately, seeking responses to questions that would divert our attention from the man whose inert blackness was made indistinguishable from his asphalt grave. Why didn't he just comply? Why didn't he just listen? Answers that should never be written in a sentence of death over a counterfeit truth. We must remember that so many others have had justice turned against their innocence, swept up as necessary collateral damage to calm privilege's imagination. suspects for just waiting at a Starbucks, just barbecuing at a park, just moving into an apartment, just babysitting, just working out at a gym, just swimming in a pool, just making a phone call from the lobby, just existing. Just did not save them. Others simply stopped existing, gone when they were just sleeping in their bed, just walking out of a garage, just reaching for their driver's license, just going for a jog, just scared that the matter of their life would not matter to anyone who might take it. Still, the eclipse passed, and after just one revolution, and streets full of every color of the rainbow, over the horizon came a judgment.
Find the defendant guilty.
A glimpse of what it means to make someone matter. Less than 10 minutes to take a life, less than 10 hours to account for a life taken. A day when justice could not find reason in the unreasonable, even when history has repeatedly done just that. We found that the blue line was not written in the permanence of blood, that officers loyal to their duty can testify to a higher truth, not just a truth that places their unity above our oxygen. Just is what justice does. It acts, even in the darkness, whether the world is recording or not. Now, just 1 year has passed, and we cannot just stop. Not while a just law awaits passage, while others just await justice. One verdict does not make assurances for the next encounter. Without real change, we will just circle ourselves in an unproductive binary dance, and justice will continue to live in two worlds. One will continue to justify second-class citizenship. The other will fight for our equal and shared humanity. Sight unseen, we must purchase a future that recalibrates the scales of justice and renews the blindfolded oath to ensure just means justice for all.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter and a producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, today, a huge day in the world of the New York Mets, your favorite team. Jacob deGrom will be back on the mound. How are you feeling?
You know, it's good to see. I mean, I think every baseball fan is excited for Jacob deGrom to be back because every time he pitches, it is electric, and hopefully he's fully better. He certainly seemed to be when he faced the Palm Beach Cardinals and had a lot of fun facing them. So it's exciting, but, you know, the Mets are certainly dealing with a ton of other injuries, even taking him off the injured list. You know, we don't know if Dinesh Vargas might end up on there and any other moves that might have to be made. And it feels like there's a handful of roster moves every day at this point due to injuries. So getting him back is definitely good for them. They are still where they are in the division, so that should help. But, you know, there's other problems beyond DeGrom.
I don't know if Luis Rojas would do this, and I haven't thought through the options enough, you know, to potentially say this would be a good idea or bad idea. If you told me tonight that DeGrom was hitting sixth or seventh in this lineup, that would not shock me based on what they've had to run out there because of all these injuries. What do you think?
Definitely. I mean, he's a good hitter. I mean, he's always been a good hitter. It's not just a commentary on the Mets lineup of late because he started his career like 3-for-4 at the plate, like back in 2014. But certainly with, you know, everyone who they've been running out there. I mean, Khalil Lee started his career with 8 straight strikeouts, which nobody had ever done before. And then he got a huge hit for them. So they've gotten those bits and pieces. Brandon Drury hit a home run for them last night, which was kind of a he's back in the league moment, I think, for a lot of fans. So sure, Jacob deGrom hitting 6, why not? I would love to see that.
All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three
is 65. So speaking of DeGrom, he has 65 strikeouts through 6 starts this year, which is tied for the 5th most for any pitcher through 6 appearances in a season. So the most through 7 is 82 by Pedro Martinez in 2000. I don't think he's quite going to get there. If he did, it would certainly be a big story, that's for sure. But if he were to strike out 10 tonight, he'd end up obviously 75. That would be tied for 7th. So regardless, we're talking about a top 10 performance to start a season. 7 if he does what we sort of expect him to do, which is be in that 10 strikeout range. And, you know, just looking at, we always talk about velocity with him these days, right? He has 49 pitches at 100 plus miles an hour this season. And that's so many more than any other starter on the list, even with the fact that he hasn't pitched in a couple of weeks. So the next most is Shane McClanahan with 10. And that includes the fact that McClanahan has been starting more in this period that DeGrom got hurt and has thrown really hard. So quite the hefty lead there, even missing some time.
Number two
is 7. So the Rays scored 7 runs in the 11th inning yesterday to cement their 11th straight win. It was 7 runs in the top of the 11th. It was the most runs by any team in any extra inning since September 15th, 2017, when the Red Sox scored 7 in the top of the 15th against the Rays, which is fun. And it was the Rays' most runs in any extra inning in franchise history. And what the Rays have been reeling off, everything they've been doing, coming back basically twice in that game. I mean, they've been really, really great. An 11-game win streak is one shy of tying the franchise record from 2004, 12 straight.
Number one
is 23. So Vlad Guerrero Jr. is 22, Ronald Acuna Jr. is 23 years old, and they each have 15 home runs now, which is tied for the most in the majors. So they're the third duo in the last 30 years to both be top two in home runs, at least 15 home runs into a season at age 23 or younger. And the only other duos to do this were Mike Trout and Bryce Harper in 2015 in July, and Juan Gonzalez and Ken Griffey Jr. in 1993. Towards the end of the season, entering the final weekend, they were both top two and a handful of times throughout the season. So just a pretty cool duo to have on hand there. And by the way, Fernando Tatis Jr. is 2 home runs shy of their pace. He has 13 of his own. So this was almost a top three at this young age kind of note, which is just so cool for the game and so awesome to see.
Yeah, I was this morning looking at some statistics about Fernando Tatis Jr. Like, his lead among all major leaguers with at least 100 plate appearances and hard hit rate is unbelievable. I mean, he's doing some things that are just crazy. And, you know, to see these young players doing all these amazing things is so much fun. On the other hand, you got an older player, Francisco Lindor, just got the $341 million deal with the Mets, really struggling. His slugging percentage, unbelievably, is lower than his on-base percentage of .295. His slugging percentage is .277. He has just 7 extra base hits in 40 games, Sarah. And I did the show Get Up this morning, and we did the segment about, you know, bet the family farm. Would you bet the family farm that Lindor will bounce back during the course of the year? And I said, no, I would bet the farm that it's too late for him to necessarily come all the way back. And then at the end of the year, he's not going to be close to his career numbers offensively, because I've had hitting coaches through the years tell me when you have acute problems at the plate, it basically takes an offseason to go back and change your approach and change your swing. And we've talked about, you know, all the signs that his swing has slowed down, all the signs that he's been very passive, you know, this year compared to other years. I think he can help the team win. He's still, you know, an excellent defender. He's drawing walks. He can help him on the bases. He can get some big hits. But in terms of putting up the numbers we're used to, I just don't see it happening in 2021. What about you?
Yeah, you know, I really think I agree there. He will certainly help the team, and having his defense alone is, you know, miles better than where the Mets were, specifically at that position, anywhere in the infield, especially in recent memory. But if you look at the underlying numbers, you know, I like to look at these expected stats from StatCast, which are looking at the quality of contact, right? And sort of predicting what a batting average should have been, a slugging percentage should have been, based on the contact that's been made. I mean, his expected batting average is .230. His expected slugging percentage is .354. So there isn't really anything there that's saying, oh no, he's been hitting the ball well. It's just, he's been running into bad luck or anything like that. And you mentioned the swing, and that's been, you know, a very common and very hot topic, you know, just trying to figure out what's wrong with him. And I look at his sweet spot rate, which is the percentage of batted balls that are basically in the launch angle sweet spot zone. So that's a way for StatCast to quantify sweet spot, something we've been saying in baseball for 100 years, right? And his sweet spot rate is way down, and it's way down from last year, and it's way down from the years when he really was very successful, you know, in 2017, 2018. And that doesn't feel, I mean, he could certainly start swinging differently tomorrow, but that does feel like something that is much more of an offseason adjustment.
Yeah. And, you know, it'll be interesting. We've seen Chris Bryant come back this year, having changed his swing, and he's a completely different player. It's the best Chris Bryant that we've ever seen. And maybe that's what Lindor will do in 2022. For now, it just might be a grind. All right, Sarah, thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Tuesday. First up, we have Dan Lee at Mr. Underscore Fancy 36. Dan writes in, "Hey, Buster, you've talked about some hitting milestones not meaning as much anymore. 40 home runs, 500 for home runs, etc. With pitching and hitting going the way it is, what pitching milestone will lose significance?"
200 strikeouts in a season. Like, that's not going to seem like that big of a deal when you have all these pitchers averaging, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12 strikeouts per 9 innings. And so you're going to have guys for 160 innings and get 200 in strikeouts. And I think generally speaking, big picture, because there's such a lack of focus on the number of pitcher wins, I think a lot of the current baseball writers, a lot of fans don't really care if a guy reaches 200 wins in his career. I still think it at least is a barometer on how much work a particular player put in, but I think it's going to lose its juice.
Next up, we have Brad Barber at B underscore Rad underscore Barber. Brad writes in, "During Sunday Night Baseball, my wife said, 'Why do you even want to watch this? It's not a good game because of the 0-0 score late. Suggestions on how to make non-fans appreciate pitching duels more.' That is a tough sell, Brad. What do you think, Buster?"
Yeah, it is a tough sell. I've talked to so many people who are in the sport who told me they find themselves really liking the extra innings. Mm-hmm. And you know why? Because they put the runner at second base, and because there's a threat of offense, and there's action, and there's defensive decisions. And do you bring the infield in? Do you bunt? Do you, you know, try to do something to move the runner? Do you put in a pinch runner? Like, general managers, coaches are telling me they like it more than they expected, you know, to be able to have that, to nudge the game along. And by the way, I thought of something else, Dan Lee, you know, a milestone that's going to mean less after this year. And I didn't look at the numbers this morning. A 3 ERA is not going to seem like a special thing. You know, in the past, especially during the steroid era, my God, if you had a 3 ERA, you were a star.
Let's go to our guy, Kevin Seipold, for the last one. At Global Travel 62, Kevin writes in, "Since there was so much talk about Backus's performance, do you know how Major League Baseball evaluates home plate umpires? Do they compare the calls the umpire made on the field to the strike zone? Does Major League Baseball ever tell an umpire they can't work behind the plate, only in the field?"
Yeah, the umpires get a grade after each game based on the electronics. And I saw yesterday that Backus, his was rated as, I might be a little bit off, but I'm pretty sure this is right, 88% in terms of his success or failure. Typically, umpires are much higher than that. So they'll get that grade. They'll get feedback from Major League Baseball. No, they won't ever tell an umpire that they can't work behind the plate and only in the field. You know, that's come up from time to time, because you do have umpires who are better on the bases than they are behind the plate. And you have some umpires who are better behind the plate than they are on the bases. No, they all rotate in some form or fashion. I will tell you this. I heard from people around baseball who were just cringing yesterday over how ugly that was on Sunday night. And they asked the question, why would you put a young umpire in that situation in a big game on national television? Because you do wonder if he kind of clutched up. I bet you I would too. Like, in that situation, You're doing that job for the first time and you're getting yelled at by star players on both teams. You get the manager, David Ross, coming out and yelling at you and saying, "Be better." you could see that, that would be a little unnerving. I definitely felt bad for him, in terms of watching that, knowing that he'd go back into the umpire's room after the game and his text messages would be just, he'd have a ton of them from different people. Some of them trying to make him feel better, you know, friends saying, "Hey, I saw you on television." That'd be tough, man.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's so much pressure to get.
Yeah.
I mean, just getting yelled at in any job is difficult. But, you know, to have to be on national television and to have the stakes be that high, that's a tricky, tricky spot. Hopefully you can do better next time.
And I just want to throw this in, too. I meant to say this yesterday. I didn't do a good job of that. I give him so much credit because he was getting yelled at by both sides and he didn't make it personal. You know, he ejected David Ross because David Ross, you know, broke the rules. And then when David Ross came out and was screaming at him, he just took it.
Mm-hmm.
And later in the game, Javier Baez was upset. And rather than make it personal and eject Baez in that situation, he warned him a second time and said, no, back off. And he gave Baez a chance to take a breath. He walked away. And guess who hit the game winning home run? Javier Baez, because the umpire didn't overreact. I give him a tip of the cap on what was a bad night for him to handle it that way. Would you agree with me?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, it always stinks when the umpire decides it's going to be out about him and starts throwing people out and causing a fit. So it was nice that he just took it. He's going to move on. And again, hopefully just be better next time. That's all you can ask.
Yeah, I've had plenty of days like he had the other day.
Of course.
That's it for today. My thanks to Jess, Doug, Sarah, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.